You can meet and hear Anthony Esalen, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. So your child goes to public school and your public school is one of the good ones. You know there are a lot of bad ones out there. You hear the horror stories all the time from a district over there or from another state, but not your teachers, not your school, not your principal, or not your school administration. It's okay there. Are you certain of that? Or you send your kid to public school and you know that there's a problem with this element or that element of the curriculum, and you say it's okay, they have an opt-out policy. Does that help shield your child completely from what else is being taught there? Ideas like gender theory, which are now prevalent even in the elementary age classroom, are they just being taught during sex ed? Or are they being taught elsewhere too? And what about the overall framework that seems to pervade public education nowadays, that the world is made up of two different kinds of people, oppressors and victims? You're one or you're the other. And that's how we understand, well, everything, not just history, but everything. Joining us to talk about the public schools and the progressive left, Mary Rice Hassan. She's Kate O'Byrne Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She earned her undergraduate and law degrees from the University of Notre Dame, and she's co-author of the new book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. Mary, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much, Todd. Great to be on.
How would you correct someone who would be under the impression that our public schools are religiously neutral?
I think the better way to think about it is that they're religiously empty. In other words, there's been an effort, starting with the court cases, but then also as our culture has changed, to really just vacuum out religious content from not just curriculum, but from culture. So getting rid of religiously based songs and hymns, things like that, restricting the ability of people who are coaches and teachers and who are people of faith, restricting their ability to even express their faith in the public schools because they're deemed to be public, they are public employees. But there's this, I look at it as literally like vacuuming out the spiritual content. So it's empty, but empty is not the same as neutral, because what comes in the place is this reliance on science, this idea that truth is relative. It really depends on sort of what, how you feel and what you think. And so that right there, that contrast is undercuts what people of faith are trying to instill in their kids.
Let's talk about the kind of more broadly speaking, the sexual revolution. But now the mm-hmm. thin end of the spear is, of course, the LGBTQ agenda. You say right. In many schools, it is simply baked into the curriculum. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, and the curriculum and the culture, and this is where I think parents need to be very aware, regardless of whether they decide to pull their kids from the public schools or not, they need to realize a couple of things. One, through the doorway of anti-bullying programs, we have seen LGBT language, LGBT identities just reaffirmed as normal, as just another alternative, as something that everyone has to conform to in terms of how they speak, affirming, validating, celebrating, all these things. And so it doesn't matter whether it's in a book, which in some states it's mandated, California, Illinois now, and some of the others, some particular school districts are bringing it in, particularly within certain books. But the bigger thing is it's come in through the culture, first through the anti-bullying programs, then through the celebrations, Pride Week, Day of Silence, all these things that usually there's a gay straight alliance or club like that, which will then host different events. And so the kids are becoming accustomed to the idea that, oh, this is just an alternative way to be. But more importantly, they start thinking about themselves differently, not as created male or female, but rather, hey, I get to discover or decide who I am. And it could be any of these ranges. I can choose any gender. I can, trans, I can go from male to female. And so that's how it's coming in. It's coming in the cultural end of the school, as well as specific curriculum mandates in particular states. But the other thing I'd caution parents about, you can look at a curriculum outline that the school might provide, and it's not going to show you all of the informal resources that teachers draw on. For example, the Southern Poverty Law Center has an arm that they call teachingtolerance.org, which aims to just give teachers things that are completely slanted on this. And so good teachers can get confused. I want to teach kids to be tolerant. And yet what they're teaching them is that this is the true way to think about the human being, that there is no male and female, that it's really a process of discovery for each person. And then I guess the other part that I would run the red flag up for parents is to realize that increasingly in the schools, whether by state mandate or school board regulation or just simply policies, the schools are deciding that they will not tell parents if a child begins to act out in terms of gender confusion or expresses an LGBT orientation of any sort, that the schools are deciding that unless the child says that they want their parents to know about that, the schools will not tell the parents. And that's a frightening thing, because then you have no ability to guide or correct or just protect your child from what's coming in.
How early does this begin?
Oh, it begins preschool, kindergarten, and especially there's a concerted effort to really bring this in at the level of kindergarten, first grade. A lot of your listeners are probably familiar with Scholastic books, Scholastic magazine. They have a whole section for teachers and parents about books that will introduce the whole idea of transgender concepts to small children. And so we're seeing that increasingly in schools across the country, where teachers are just taking it upon themselves to read I Am Jazz, or just other books that normalize this idea that you're not born male or female. Rather, someone assigns that to you. And what matters is your feelings, whether they conform to sort of stereotypical male or stereotypical female, and you can just kind of go, it's so confusing for these kids, but they start young. And again, we cite a lot of stories and examples in our book just about this happening, not just in your standard public schools, but in charter schools. So parents who think charter schools are a refuge need to realize this, that's not the case, that teachers are taking it upon themselves to shape kids to question who they are, to be tolerant towards all genders. And we want our kids to be nice, but not to let go of the truth that we've given them about who they are. So it's insidious, but it's a concerted agenda, and it's backed up by litigation. And that's honestly why we're so pessimistic that parents have really any hope of forcing change during their child's school lifetime. You can fight these battles to hopefully get the public schools back to where they should be, but it's not going to happen. Your child's impressionable years, and there are no do-overs on childhood. That's the really sobering thing that parents need to come to grips with.
In that vein, tell us the story of Nova Classical Academy in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, so it's a perfect example. It was a charter school, and it had diverse families who sent their kids there, but they were united in a desire for a classical education and, rooted in certain ideals and truths. And what happened was a new family moved in, and they had a young, I believe it was kindergarten boy, who then decided he was gender exploring and then eventually came out as transgender. So the parents approached the school and said, hey, you need to be affirming of our child. And a key thing to know is that the parents here are activists in pushing this agenda. So they chose this charter school and they put their kid in there, and then they started pushing and demanding all these changes in policy in terms of restroom use, facilities, whether everyone was going to be forced to conform and call the child a different name and use different pronouns so that the classmates might, you know, they were familiar with this little boy that all of a sudden they're supposed to call him she, and that this would be enforced upon kids. And the school pushed back, and a complaint was filed with the Human Rights Commission in that city, and the school ended up settling. And this is what we're seeing, is that school districts or individual schools do not want to spend valuable education dollars fighting these fights over the transgender issues. And the other side is well-funded, they're determined, they will not stop. And the irony here is the family, and the Gender Justice was the organization that was kind of pushing for all these changes, they got a settlement that forced Nova Classical Academy to follow all of this pro-transgender stuff. And yet the family had pulled their child out already and put the child in a different school. So there was no transgender child in the school, but they succeeded in forcing this school to change its culture to treat every child as if any child could be transgender. And so it really is kind of a excellent example of why this situation is so tough for families. You can have the greatest principal, the greatest teachers, like-minded families, and if someone comes in from the outside and they're backed by the litigation arm of these LGBT advocates, you're going to lose. Again, not because there aren't people who agree with you, but because of the financial pressure of fighting a lawsuit. And then just the PR disaster that happens when the transgender advocates start accusing everyone of bigotry and bullying and all of this stuff. So it's quite disturbing for families that parents just don't have that control over what their kids are going to be exposed to.
Mary Rice Hassan is our guest, author of the book Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. We're talking about public schools and the progressive left. When we come back, we'll talk about the evangelistic fervor.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about public schools and the progressive left. Mary Rice Hassan is our guest, co-author of the new book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. She's Kate O'Byrne Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and earned her undergraduate and law degrees from the University of Notre Dame. Mary, you say that there is an almost evangelistic fervor in the public schools over some of the issues we've been discussing here. How would you describe that?
Yeah, so here's one of the things to realize is that while some of this stuff has only really exploded kind of into the public view in the past 2 to 5 years within individual school districts, the education programs at most of the major universities that have schools of education, they have been on board with this agenda for, you know, close to a decade, sometimes longer than that. So you have a whole bunch of teachers who have been in the pipeline, who have really been schooled in this, that this is the way human beings are. We are not male or female, that we need to discover our gender, that parents need to back off and let their child figure it out, and parents have no right to know, especially if they're religious parents who might interfere. And so these young teachers are coming out of these schools of education already indoctrinated in believing the whole transgender sort of anthropology and the way to look at the person, but they have that fervor that says, this is how I create kids who will be kind and tolerant and the next generation that's going to save the world. And this is how we teach kids not to bully. And they're sort of already on the defensive towards parents and religion, because it's really been faith-based people who have pushed back strongly, saying, nope, you know, we know you're created male and female, and science is on our side. I mean, that's an ironic thing too. It's religious people often get accused of kind of disregarding science, but science tells us you're male or female in every cell of your body, every cell. And that doesn't change because your feelings change or you put on a dress or you change your name. And yet, you know, because there's this push from the LGBT community that says we deserve our rights, we deserve tolerance, we deserve this. Instead of just teaching kids to be kind, the emphasis is on persuading everyone to approve of and to affirm and to go along with this line of thinking. It's not enough just to live and let live. They really, really want everyone to approve and affirm. And that's a tough thing. You know, parents' attention is divided and they've got so many things to worry about. And as I said, they oftentimes don't know what's going on in the classroom or in the school culture. And the schools will not tell them if a child has decided to come out as transgender and now you have a little boy in the girls' restroom. The schools don't have to tell the parents that. So it's a scary situation for parents who really, really care about having their kids have a stable sense of identity and understanding of who they are in reality.
What is the rationale for cutting the parents out of the loop there on that issue?
Well, the stated rationale is this, that kids who are LGBT say that when they do surveys, just surveying those kids, they say, we're bullied and we oftentimes are not accepted by our families. And if we don't have family acceptance, we're going to be at a higher risk of suicide and we're going to feel worse. So the schools then say the presumption is going to be that if a child who's identifying as LGBT says, I don't want my parents to know, the school's presumption is, okay, these parents are going to be problematic. They're not going to keep the kids safe. They're not going to affirm the child. And parents lose the ability to really help the child understand him or herself and just to work through whatever problems might be underlying this. And instead, there's this just buy-in, not just from individual schools, but from the National School Boards Association, National Association of Elementary School Principals, Secondary School Principals, the PTA. All of these official education establishment groups are all in with the LGBT agenda. And so this idea that kids will be unsafe with LGBT kids will be unsafe with their parents or at home unless those parents go along with the agenda from the outset, that's the stated rationale. But really, honestly, underneath it is the realization that parents who care about the kids, if your child is confused or going through something, they want to know and they want to help them work it out. But for the LGBT community, there's only one good result, and that's for the child to really embrace that identity as LGBT. So they don't want someone, parents in particular, you know, talking a child through and seeing if there's some other underlying issue where the child might end up saying, you know what, that's it, I get it. You know, it was some trauma or some this or that. It's not that I have this LGBT identity, but the school culture and the internet, you know, social pressures and peer networks are very strong in terms of pushing kids to think that if they're not fitting in or they're struggling with things, it's probably because they're LGBT and they're bullied and they're not accepted and they need to just come out and be true to themselves. So there's a lot of factors going on there.
Let's broaden this to kind of the political agenda that's at work in the public school classroom with what has been recognized as identity politics. You might need to define that for us in a careful way, mm-hmm. but also a new way of teaching civics that is mm-hmm. producing, as you say, activists rather than citizens.
Right. Putting aside the whole LGBT issue and questions of faith, it used to be understood that our public schools were meant to foster a shared sense of what it means to be a citizen, loyalty and respect for American ideals, and an understanding of the foundations of our country. You know, where does our liberty come from, and what does the First Amendment mean, and all of these things. But what's happened really, particularly in the past 10 years, is there have been problems with civics education for decades, but the most recent push has been pushing kids not to identify as Americans and to see the good of our country and the fact that there's so much that is exceptional about our country in spite of the real flaws in our historical path, but to push them to identify as global citizens on the one hand with their allegiance sort of to the world, or to think of themselves in a very splintered way, that to see themselves in terms of this identity politics. In other words, who are you? Are you, what oppressed category are you? And to hold on to that identity instead of realizing, you know, throughout our history, many, many different groups of immigrants, many different groups have struggled to attain full rights and all these things. That's, unfortunately, that's part of the American experience. It's part of the human experience. But we don't want to hold on to grievances. We don't want to identify ourselves primarily by some splintered identity that cuts us off from being American. But that's unfortunately what's happening. We're losing this sense in the public schools that we are Americans. We're proud to be Americans. We know what that means. We're grounded in certain ideals and the Constitution, and there's a place for everyone here to grow and to succeed. Instead, there's this, it's really kind of a, I don't know, almost a sense of being ashamed that there's something wrong with our country, and a focus on oppression and grievance and, you know, sort of splintered identity politics.
It becomes, if I'm not mistaken, kind of the template through which everything is seen. The world is viewed as divided into victims and oppressors. Yeah. And that's how mm-hmm. that's how history is understood. That's how every subject mm-hmm. is eventually mm-hmm. forced to be understood. Talk a bit about that, if you would, Mary.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. There's not just from the perspective of American history, but from the perspective of sort of the culture today and encouraging kids towards what they call civic participation, which is a good thing. It becomes activism. Are you taking part in protests? Do you understand who the oppressors are in a situation? And unfortunately, that's usually considered to be dividing us by race, so that white people are at fault, and then dividing us by sex, that men are at fault, and then it gets splintered from there. It could be additional different identities, whether it's the LGBT versus straight, whether it's, you know, one ethnicity versus another. There's this constant sense of encouraging kids, unfortunately, to embrace a victim mentality, to identify others as oppressors, and then to feel if you're a victim, that gives you rights. And we're no longer all equal. We're elevating those who claim to be victims and marginalizing oppressors. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing in politics today. But you see it on a lower voltage level in the schools. But it's happening nonetheless. This is the mentality that the kids are being encouraged to not just embrace, but the lens through which they're taught history, they're taught their civic participation, they're, you know, that they look at even literature, just this whole splintering and focus on victims and oppressors, which, having raised a bunch of kids, that's a way to raise weak children, you know, who are so focused on what's gone wrong and a feeling of powerlessness instead of teaching kids, hey, you know, you have your gifts, you have your circumstances, whatever they are, you can do something with that. And, you know, let's make room for everyone, but let's strive and respect others and work hard. But unfortunately, that's not the message of today.
We're talking about public schools and the progressive left. Mary Rice Hassan is our guest, co-author of the new book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. Folks, revisionist history is one of the problems in our public schools. And Dr. Mark Kalthoff of Hillsdale College will be making the case against revisionist history at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. Dr. Kalthoff will be joined by Dr. Anthony Esselin, Dr. Ryan Anderson, Dr. Beverly Yonke, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, and Pastor Chris Rosebrough. Learn more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Making the Case is Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. When we come back, how do you manage a classroom, much less an entire school, when everyone is divided into oppressors and victims, when everyone's being triggered all the time, and you're being taught that there's no absolute truth or right or wrong? We'll be right back.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
October is Pastor Appreciation Month, and to mark the occasion, the Lutheran Witness is tackling ministry and mental health. Some articles focus on life in the ministry, others deal with emotional wellness generally, still others, including what are perhaps the most powerful pieces of writing in this power-packed issue, grapple with the complicated and often thorny relationship between the two. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Concordia University, Wisconsin is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During October, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia University, Wisconsin. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Come on aboard. I promise you we won't hurt the horse. We'll treat him well, feed him well. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about public schools and the progressive left. Mary Rice Hassan, author of Get Out Now, is our guest. Mary, I'm just wondering, in a practical sense, how do you manage a classroom, much less an entire school, when these things are being taught, where the kids are being taught that everyone is divided into oppressors and victims? Because school's a pretty rough and tumble place, even without these toxic ideas, when the kids are at the same time being taught that there's no right or wrong or absolute of any kind in terms of truth. What kind of policies have to be put into place to even manage this situation?
Yeah, and unfortunately, this dovetails with the whole idea of social-emotional learning. You know, there's a genuine insight that shows that how a child feels and their context for life is going to affect how they learn, right? A hungry child has a harder time learning. A child who's coming from a family situation or neighborhood situation that's full of trauma and violence is going to come to school less ready to learn. All that's true, but what we're seeing in the schools is the introduction of social emotional learning, where the teachers will have these sessions every day where they sit in a circle and they introduce, you know, one of these ideas, and they're encouraging kids to share about their own vulnerabilities. They're encouraging kids to express their own anger about different things. It's really kind of a psychological, emotional manipulation, but they're also keeping track of what kids say. You know, so in some places, there's how the teacher, who's not a psychologist, assesses a child's sense of respect for others, sense of self. You know, do they have self-confidence? How a teacher assesses that becomes part of the child's record, including whether they're showing attitudes that the school considers to be problematic. It's, again, it's a really uncomfortable thing, because you're right. If you're inflaming kids to think of themselves as either victims or oppressors, that's sort of a recipe for a lot of conflict. But then on the other side, then they'll have these circles and gatherings every day where they're supposed to talk things through, but they're emphasizing and basically just engaging in a lot of psychological manipulation and emotional measuring of kids. And kids are pretty smart. They catch on pretty quickly about how they need to speak, how they need to act in order to win approval. And so that's what I mean by the danger that you can have a kid who's from a great family, and they come in, unless they want to be ostracized, unless they want to be tagged with a label, you know, the bigot label, the intolerant label, the far right label or something, they're going to figure out how they need to speak, use the language of the day, and just kind of enter into this mindset that has become the atmosphere and the environment for our public schools. And again, this is in small towns, not just urban areas, not just the coast. This is in the heartland. And we're just, I think this is why when we looked at a lot of data in the course of writing our book and looked at how kids are turning out, you know, when they graduate from high school, before they really get to college, how are they turning out in terms of their beliefs and their allegiance to American values? And, you know, whether are they more progressive in certain attitudes in spite of coming from conservative families? And every year there's an evaluation of kids who are entering college. In other words, you're evaluating them on the basis of what K through 12 has brought them to. And we're at the point where the kids who are graduating from high school now are the most liberal generation that we've had since the 60s and early 70s. And this is in spite of what their parents do. So they're getting this from the schools. And they're also the least religious generation that we've had. And the generation that's most gender confused and expressing most of these alternative identities. You know, where does that come from? From the public school. It's in your backyard.
Just in terms of kind of academic results, are the public schools delivering?
Well, so, you know, people have been aware of the issues with public schools and academics for a long time. It's been up and down. And I think, unfortunately, every parent sort of hopes their school is the exception, right? They think, well, my school is good. My kids' teachers are great. But the reality is the numbers show we're just mediocre. And in some schools, we're abysmal. You know, particularly the schools in the inner cities are just doing a horrible job of educating kids. So you have just very small percentages of kids in some places like Detroit. It can be as low as 5% where you have kids who are proficient at grade level in reading or math. In places like D.C. or some of the other inner cities, you may have numbers that are a little higher. It's 15, 19, 24%. But by and large, even when you factor in kind of the average, it's a mediocre result. So, yeah, there are bright spots in terms of some places where kids are coming out in the gifted and talented programs. You know, they're coming out with the high math scores and things like that, but they're still going to have the rest of the problems that we've talked about. But the average kid who's going through public school is being shortchanged educationally. And that's been a continuing problem in spite of all the money we're spending, thousands of dollars per child, the time they spend in school, but the schools are spending so much time on all of these other things that they're not doing the one job that parents expect of them, which is teach my child, you know, read, write, do math, to learn science, to learn history, so I can go out and be a productive citizen, get a job and be successful. And way too many of our kids are being shortchanged on that.
In the few minutes left to us, I'd like you to respond to some what I'm sure are for you common objections. This call to for an exodus from public schools for the good of our children. Someone is going to say, look, I went to public school. It was good enough for me. I turned out fine. My kids will too. How do you respond?
I'd say it is not the public school that you remember. And it's not even the public school if you've raised older kids. It's not even the public school of 10 years ago. It is a radically different environment and is being driven by people that parents have no influence on. It's the outside activist groups. It's these professional education establishment groups. Most school boards are not responsive to parents any longer. So it's not the same public school. And the game changer really has been just this promotion of the LGBT culture and identities and insisting that everyone conform to that. So it's not the same at all.
Someone might say, well, aren't there still a large number of committed Christians who are working in these schools and trying to do what's best for their students?
Sure, but we have to realize that teachers, Christian teachers and principals and staff members wear a straitjacket when they're in the public schools. And you have groups, litigation groups, Freedom From Religion Foundation, you know, a number of others that will litigate the smallest thing. And as an example, there's an ongoing lawsuit against a football coach who knelt after a game in the middle of the field to say a prayer. And the school district got sued. Why? Because he is a representative of, quote, the government, because he's a public employee. And if he does anything that's overtly approving of religion, even just his personal expression, that's considered too much for kids to bear, and the school district faces a lawsuit. So again, you can have, and there are great, committed, faithful people working in the public schools. Unfortunately, their hands are not only tied, their jobs are at risk if they are overtly supporting a Christian perspective or even just common sense that we're male and female and that doesn't change just because you put on a dress or you change your name. And, you know, so that's really no consolation. These teachers are stymied in whatever good they might intend to do.
Two final quick questions. Someone says, look, I think I can navigate where the trouble spots are in mm-hmm. the curriculum, and I will simply have my kid opt out. Why is that not enough?
Oh, yeah, no, very good point. Because here's the thing. In a number of states, there are opt-out provisions for sex ed. But all of the LGBT culture does not come in through sex ed, although it is part of some sex ed programs. For the most part, it's coming in separately through anti-bullying, through tolerance, through just school culture. And parents are not allowed to opt out of that. And when it comes in through the curriculum, as for example, in California, where they have integrated LGBT content specifically into grade level texts, the California Department of Education has said, nope, no opt out. Why? Because it's the state's specific intent that every child be exposed to this. So you can't opt out of a school culture. And in many places, you can't opt out even from the LGBT stuff that's in the curriculum. And the courts have said repeatedly that parents cannot opt out of just general educational instruction. So if you don't like a book that's chosen for literature because you think it's undermining your ideals, unless you have a teacher who's willing to just deal with this privately with you, you're not going to be able to opt out. So that it really is no protection. Your kids are not going to be protected from what you find objectionable.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, are charter schools any better? It doesn't sound like they are.
No, I mean, charter schools are public schools, and that's what parents have to realize. There are many good structures and programs that people are trying to implement through the charter schools, but you have the, they're subject to the same mandates in terms of culture, in terms of tolerance, in terms of anti-bullying, and they're being sued where they don't conform to that. So charter schools, unfortunately, are not the safe haven that parents might hope them to be.
Mary Rice Hassan is Kate O'Byrne Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She earned her undergraduate and law degrees from the University of Notre Dame. She is co-author of the new book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. When you purchase Get Out Now using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for the book, Get Out Now. Mary, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, and thanks for all you do.
Terry Mattingly is with us on the other side of the break on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to talk about a Los Angeles Times story that he says is one of the most slanted stories he has seen in a mainstream publication in a long time, and that's saying something. We'll find out why after this.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
This is a short ad, and I don't have time to explain the whole thing to you, but you and your family need a good Lutheran church. You need this for spiritual nourishment and training and for the support and community that comes from like-minded Christians. Your children need Lutheran friends who can become Lutheran spouses. If you don't have that where you live, you should move. One of the places you should consider is Fort Wayne, so that you can attend Redeemer. Maybe send your kids to Redeemer Classical School. Besides the church, Fort Wayne has lots to offer, including jobs. If you want to talk to families that have done just this, picked up, and moved to Fort Wayne for the sake of church, we can introduce you to some. If you want to come for a visit, we can help with housing. Life is too short, and your children are too precious to live where you are not spiritually fed and cared for. Your job is not the most important thing in your life. Find Redeemer Lutheran in Fort Wayne on the internet and drop us a line. We would love to help.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is the author of our book of the month for October, Reading Isaiah with Luther. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Learn how the conscience is a gift from God and how only through Christ can you receive a clean conscience in Reading Isaiah with Luther, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Reading Isaiah with Luther.